Jazz United. This is Greg Bryant, host of Jazz After Hours on WBGO.
And I'm Nate Chenin, editorial director at WBGO. This is a show where we talk about issues in the music, what is happening in the culture, and what's on our minds. And this week, we've got a doozy for you. We want to talk about Billie Holiday, Lady Day.
That's right.
You know, I don't think, Greg, there's ever a week that goes by when Billie Holiday isn't on our mind in some way, right?
Such an iconic figure that we both love. But yeah, we had to talk about her today because there are two films that try to address her story, right?
The first is out today. This is a Hulu original directed by Lee Daniels. It's called The United States versus Billie Holiday. And it comes on the heels of a documentary film simply titled Billie. And we're going to talk about both of those films today. We're going to get into it a bit.
We've got to do that. And I think to start things off right, let's hear some music. Let's
do that. Yeah.
Put it to the forefront why this woman is so iconic with the sound and the timbre of her voice. This is All of Me from 1941, Billie Holiday, right here on Jazz United.
All of me, why not take all of me? Can't you see I'm no good without you?
There are so many great singers, but there is something that she does that very, very few people in any idiom have ever been able to touch, right? That feeling that she is not only pouring out her soul, but also pouring it right into yours, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She speaks to you, and it's haunting, right? And so this is one of the reasons, I think, why over the years, and especially since her death, her tragic death, there have been so many portrayals and kind of, speculative imaginings of Billie Holiday, you know, and embodiments, right?
Yeah.
There are few people in this music who have ever been portrayed as often and with as much gusto, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Audra McDonald portraying Billie Holiday on Broadway in a play that was, you know, loosely adapted from her autobiography with William Dufty. I know Dee Dee Bridgewater had a one-woman show off-Broadway. And then, of course, Lady Sings the Blues,
right,
which, you know, was, a huge movie starring Diana Ross and Billy Dee Williams. So there've been all of these portrayals. And I wonder what have your thoughts been about the ways in which Billy is, you know, embodied, inhabited, conjured, over the years?
Sure. I think that unfortunately, through Billie's legend and those who have chosen to recast it, there have been several brilliant, brave attempts. Kudos again to Dee Dee and Audra. But on the Hollywood side of things, severe misfires have categorized the recasting of Billie Holiday. I think her story has been misaligned. It's been enhanced to the point of tomfoolery. I mean, you really don't know, you know, where the seriousness begins, because there's all of this sensationalism that's enhanced for the purpose of engaging the audience. And these directors and writers are projecting these things, these ideals onto her that may or may not have been true at all.
Right. You know, that idea of the multiple portrayals and this idea of Billie Holiday as a kind of prism through which people, you know, project all kinds of things. Some really fascinating and valuable scholarship was done around that, especially, you know, sort of early in this century, by Robert G. O'Mealy and then by Farrah Griffin. And I think anyone listening to this podcast, there's probably a good chance that you're familiar with this book, but if not, please seek it out. It's by Farrah Jasmine Griffin. It's titled, If You Can't Be Free, Be a Mystery, In Search of Billie Holiday. And part of what this book so elegantly conveys is that idea of her mutability as an image and as a kind of symbol, you know, and that idea that everybody brings something to the table when they try to engage with the legend of Billie Holiday. And also, on some level, she talks about the ways in which Billie, even during her life, was aware of that mutability of her image and of public perception. You know, she was mm-hmm. she was not strictly someone who was acted upon. She was, you know, up to a point, she was a willing participant in the sort of manipulation of her image. Mm-hmm. Now, I say up to a point. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. you know, when we talk about that, that line has been crossed. As you said, many, many times, again and again.
But I think we need to understand why. Mm-hmm. And I just had this thought this morning, you know, Billie coming up in the streets of Baltimore, Maryland, and then Harlem, New York. There's a code in the streets. There's an ethical code that's, mm-hmm. you know, we don't snitch. We don't tell everything that's happened to us, because at the end of the day, we're responsible for ourselves. But those who have inflicted harm on us or that we've had conflict with, we don't send them over to the dogs, because that makes us less than a person. And whether you agree with that or not is on you. But mm-hmm. understanding why Billie Holiday allowed certain points of her image to be distorted or to become opaque, that has a lot to do with her protecting herself and the code that she lived by. I just wanted to point mm-hmm. that out.
Yeah. And refusing to self-identify as a victim.
Right.
Like there's a kind of refusal to be victimized, even when sharing a story that that screams of a kind of, you know, abuse and powerlessness at times.
I mean, yes.
The act of telling that story is a kind of, you know, it's an expression of agency in some way, you know. And when she collaborated with William Dufty on her autobiography, even though the falsehoods in this book begin on page one, mm-hmm. There is a way in which, like, she understands what is happening. You know, she's not being duped here.
Right.
Now, that brings us to this Hulu film. Now, Greg, the last time you and I talked about a movie on this podcast, we were mm-hmm. talking about Pixar's Soul. Mm-hmm. And at one point we tossed to my kids. So they're looking forward to talking about the United States versus Billie Holiday. I'll have them on shortly.
Your parenting style is really interesting, man.
No, I kid. This is not please don't show this film to your children. Please don't. You may not want to show it to your loved ones. But let's get into that. Before we take one step further, why don't we actually hear, you know, at the top of this show, we heard Billie singing All of Me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for a bit of an A-B comparison, this is a song that is one of the recurring themes in this movie. So let's hear Andra Day sing as Billie Holiday singing All of Me from the movie The United States versus Billie Holiday.
Just say this: I'm looking forward to hearing Miss Day's music after this movie and after all of this is over, because in catching a recent interview with her on CBS Sunday Morning, I was moved by how she was impacted by doing the study on Miss Billie Holiday. And doing that level of study should produce some very interesting results in the future. And I'm looking forward to hearing in her own music, in Miss Day's music, the new shape that influence will take.
That is beautifully put, Greg, and it is also generous, but I do believe you're burying the lead here. because that generous assessment runs a little counter to how you feel about this film.
Amen.
And I always
just know
this because
say something good about him first before you go in.
There we go.
So we're going to go in.
I'll say something nice. I think mm-hmm. that for someone who is not primarily an actor, on a performance level, I think she does some impressive work in this movie. So that's the nice thing that I'll say. You know, mm-hmm. she's in there with some real seasoned professionals in the acting category.
Yeah.
And I think she does hold her own. Mm-hmm. Now, we've said our nice thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Greg, how do you feel about this movie?
It's despicable. It let me down. I'm disappointed. I'm hurt. The mark has been missed again. And we're hearing these things like Oscar nominations and buzz and all of these wonderful platitudes for something that I believe I wouldn't recommend to my enemy. There is so much misinformation and enhancement of information in this film. Watching this for the first time and not knowing who Billie Holiday is, you're still not going to know who she is. I have a thing about people who wear the t-shirt of an artist and maybe have a best of compilation and call that research. That's not research. And someone who's walking in on the ground floor, as Lee Daniels stated, being mesmerized by the Diana Ross performance in Lady Sings the Blues, obviously
that's
he
a red
had
flag,
a perspective.
Huh? That's a red flag going in.
A big one.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, so we're going to tease that apart, but I feel compelled to do my sort of, my bare minimum as a journalist here and just tell people a bit about how this movie came about. So this film is based on a book, and the book is not a Billie Holiday biography, but it's called Chasing the Scream, The First and Last Days of the War on Drugs by Johann Hari. Now, in this book, there's a story told about what happened with Harry Anslinger,
mm-hmm.
who was in the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, and set out to make a name for himself prosecuting jazz musicians for their drug use. And so far we're in the realm of fact, right? So far this all tracks.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a sub story, a subplot that Johann Hari is, you know, very clearly fascinated by that involves an African-American agent named Jimmy Fletcher, who gets put on the case and effectively cozies up to Billy, infiltrates her inner circle, and according to Hari, falls in love with Billie Holiday. And we'll talk a little about Jimmy Fletcher, right? But
mm-hmm.
one thing that troubles me about this movie, which was adapted for the screen by a really notable playwright, Suzanne Laurie Parks.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if there is a central figure, dramatically speaking, in this film, it's not Billie Holiday, it's Jimmy Fletcher.
Agreed.
So this is a movie about an ambitious young black federal agent who feels acutely the burden of his race, feels that he is doing something to better the community by, you know, ridding the streets of the scourge of drugs. But he also has, you know, he's torn because he recognizes the artistry of this woman that he's pursuing. and if there is a dramatic pivot in this film, it has to do with his tortured feelings, right? And when I realized that watching this, I got pretty upset because mm-hmm. I felt like this is a movie ostensibly about Billie Holiday that effectively renders her an object to be acted upon or a pawn in her own story.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
Honestly, again, it's just an attempt to co-opt the name mm-hmm. to sell films. And again, what we have is the image of black American music or the image of jazz whichever you call it, being used to promote certain stereotypes, not only about the music, but the players, the people who gave their lives to embody it. Again, I really place the blame here with Lee Daniels. Again, he knows, he's savvy. He knows how to win an Oscar. He knows how to at least get a nomination. And I'm not saying that his wisdom was lacking here if you're playing to get an award. Mm-hmm. But the cultural trust that he has, in my opinion, is on the verge of being violated because of the exploitative nature of this movie. You can't really zero in on Billie Holiday to tell the complete story about the war on drugs against minorities. If that's the real movie here, make it be about that and not mm-hmm. about Billie Holiday.
You know, I had this thought, Greg, that you're reminding me of. As I was watching it in the first, you know, the first half hour, first 40 minutes of this movie, I kept asking myself, who is this for? Mm-hmm. I realize now that we haven't issued a spoiler warning yet on this podcast.
Too late.
I don't think you can spoil something that's already so rotten, but let's say it now. So this movie opens with this premise, right? Strange fruit, this like totemic, powerful, incandescent song.
Right.
Okay. So it tells us that without showing us. And mm-hmm. and it assumes on the part of the viewer that you know all about the history of this song. So, okay, all the conversation is about Strange Fruit. And, you know, it's this song that in the universe told by this movie, every time she walks on stage, people in the audience are shouting out for her to play it like it's one of her greatest hits. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, it was a very important song in her career, but it wasn't a jukebox hit, right?
It was banned from jukeboxes and radio.
Right. And the power of this song, we don't really get to that until like an hour into the movie. So in the meantime, you're just sort of thrown into it. So if you are someone who does not know the story of Billie Holiday, does not know the story of Strange Fruit, I don't know, like, you're going to be so lost in the first, you know, half of this film. And if you do know Billie Holiday and do know the story of that song, you will be affronted as we were.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, again, who is this movie for?
Yeah.
You know, it's so frustrating to me because there is an interesting correlation here, right, between her political outspokenness and her insistence on using her voice mm-hmm. to speak out against injustice. I mean, that is genuine. There is a correlation between that and the way that she was targeted and pursued and prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting. I think that is an interesting correlation. I just feel like at every single step of production and planning of this movie, mm-hmm. When faced with the choice to go sensational and lurid, that is the door that they walked through.
Yeah,
And I don't feel any feeling or fondness for the art form.
You run the risk of taking the car off the road when you glorify and you don't seek to enlighten. And yeah, who's this movie for? The people who vote on the Oscars, the Oscar people. Because they don't know, they don't care about Billie Holiday. They just care that there was another movie starring a young, attractive African-American who bore her soul and bore other things. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that it's right necessarily to say that's the only kind of movie that we're looking for from a character or a protagonist like that. We need to raise our consciousness.
Yeah.
We need to call foul when there is a foul. And it's hard to do, and I'll take the criticism on my part, but I can't get behind this film, man. I just can't.
No. I mean, it's clear that we are offended, right? And, you know, in addition to our offense, I also just feel, you know, it's the weaker emotion of the two, but I also feel disappointed and let down, just because there's a lot of talent involved in this production. You know, we mentioned Suzanne Laurie Parks. You know, the filmmaking itself, I mean, Lee Daniels knows how to make something look good. Mm-hmm. He understands filmmaking, you know. Yeah. This movie looks great, mm-hmm. you know. They spent a lot of money on the production. We mentioned Jimmy Fletcher. He's played by Trevante Rhodes, who did amazing work in Moonlight. You know, he's an enormous talent. Mm-hmm. And Tallulah Bankhead is played by Natasha Lyonne. Mm-hmm. You know, I could go on and on. There's so much talent. The music, a lot of the music in this movie was done by Chris Bowers, mm-hmm. great jazz pianist and composer who has
That's right.
Previously done great work in film scoring. Yeah. I don't particularly like the use of music in this film. I don't think the scoring is well implemented. Mm-hmm. It feels heavy-handed to me. So I just feel like this is one of those cases where a lot of talent went squandered or misdirected, misguided, right? Mm-hmm.
That's really it. 'Cause when you look at a biopic, it's in the same neighborhood to me, or should have as much reverence as a historical film. It's like, okay, this should really feel like 1947, not in just how the cinematography is, but how the musicians hold their instruments, how the banter is off the stage, how there shouldn't be crowd surfing until about 1970 so, but we see it in this movie that's supposed to be from the 1940s. Like, there are so many errors in the period acclamation in this piece that it didn't allow me to concentrate mm-hmm. very well.
Yeah. And one of those, you know, I've been sort of resisting the urge to get all jazz nitpicky. But, you know, we talk about signs that things are amiss. There is, we open this podcast by playing Billy and Lester. There is a character in this film named Lester Young.
Mm-hmm.
He wears a pork pie hat. He plays mm-hmm. a tenor saxophone at a rakish angle. And he does not sound on the horn at all like Lester. The style of the music is completely anachronistic. And he is portrayed by Tyler James Williams, who, if you know him, you may know him as the kid in Everybody Hates Chris. Shout out to Chris Rock.
Yeah.
He is, you know, look, man, has there ever been a character who is richer for portrayal than Lester Young?
Yes.
Come on, man.
He's the cat.
Like, this should be a perfect opportunity for someone to get super eccentric and really, like, bring a character to life.
Sure.
The Lester Young in this movie is just kind of a lackey who stands around and mumbles and complains about getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
There's no lexicon. There's no, you know, Lester Young, man. He should run away with the heart of this movie. That character.
Agreed.
And he is just a factotum, as is, in a very brief scene, Louis Armstrong, mm-hmm. who is depicted playing a Harmon mute in a style that, you know, completely doesn't make any sense. I mean,
yeah.
Louis Armstrong was not just like a dude on stage.
Sure.
Like, you know what I mean? It's just like,
I know what you mean.
I feel like we have so much bigger fish to fry here, clearly, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. our objections to this movie are much bigger than these factual things. But
yeah,
I mean, if you're not going to get those things right in a movie about Billie Holiday, just hang it up and go home, man.
Yeah.
You know,
they did that in 1972.
Oh, man. All right.
You know,
Greg, I need a drink.
No, I hear you. I need a nap. I hear you. It's exhausting. It's exhausting.
Well, look, there is some good news, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there is.
We actually have something amounting to an antidote. And it actually, there is a point of connection here. So I think what we need a bit of a soul cleanse, and I think we have to turn to the source for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's hear some more Billie Holiday here. I want to hear Speak Low, if that's all right. Let's do that one.
Mm-hmm.
Billie Holiday on the Kurt Vile classic, Speak Low.
I wait, darling, I wait. to me, speak love to me, and soon.
Greg, let's speak low about another film, one that we feel quite a bit better about.
Yeah.
And maybe if you're listening, maybe you saw this. Towards the end of last year, a documentary was released in select theaters, but I think most people probably saw it video on demand. It's simply titled Billy. It's a movie by James Erskine. And it draws on just an enormous trove of audio recordings by a really fascinating figure named Linda Kuhl. And, you know, this film, it's really sort of intoxicating, I think. And it kind of has a way of sneaking up on you. I don't know if you felt this way. I feel like when I first was watching it, I had to be drawn into its spell in a way. And the more I think about it, the more I appreciate it. I think it's going to be, you know, a part of our essential canon.
Mm-hmm. I definitely feel that when I watch it. I watched it twice, actually. Once just for the vibe and feel, if you will. And then the second time to make some mental notes about several of the artists that Linda interviewed in her quest to actually write a book about Billy that never really happened due to Linda's untimely death in the late 1970s. I was really amazed at even what, you know, 10 or 15 years does with allowing people in Billy's life to be able to come clean, to be able to tell their truth about who she was. There's this code, if you hang with musicians, Nate, you know about this. Those that are listening out there may know as well. When you hang with musicians of a certain generation, when certain figures come up that are maybe a touch or controversial or a tad, opaque, there's this natural ability to want to protect their partners.
Right.
You know, cats don't talk about, you know, the night Lee Morgan was shot, or they don't talk about, you know, seeing so-and-so, you know, in the midst or the throes of heavy addiction. Mm-hmm. They want to protect their family. But I feel like distance and the real love for Billy allowed these folks like Count Basie and Papa Joe Jones, to name a few, to tell their story unabridged about who Billie Holiday was to them.
Well, here's the interesting thing about this, the most interesting thing about this film for me is that in a certain way, this is a movie about the process of putting together a biography. You know, Linda Kuhl is this star-crossed figure, a really tenacious and perceptive journalist, and someone who you know, as a young white woman, identified with the mystique and the beauty and the tragedy of Billie Holiday. And over the course of her interviews, you can hear her seeking to cut to the heart, the human heart of the matter, you know?
Right.
She takes an approach quite different than you know, a jazz historian would take. And in some of these interviews, you know, you mentioned Papa Joe Jones. I mean, he has a difficult interview with her, you know?
Yeah.
And you are confronted with the fact that she, as a white woman, has to go up against some of the same problems that Billy faced as a woman in the music, you know. Now it's a completely different set of social circumstances, a different, you know, she's a white woman. She comes from, you know, what I think is quite a different socioeconomic class, but just the sheer sort of dismissal that she sometimes runs up against in her interview subjects, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And even there's a moment early in the film where she talks to one of the pimps from Baltimore.
Right.
And I don't know the exact quote, but he says something like, yeah, well, sometimes you just gotta hit a woman, you know? Sometimes they're just asking for it. They love it. You just gotta hit them, you know, you gotta, you know, slap them around. There is a certain kind of just, you know, gross bravado in saying that to a female interviewer, right?
Right.
So a lot of that is just like on display in this movie in a way that I'll confess, on my first viewing, I found it disconcerting. I felt like there was too much of Linda Kuhl in this movie. And then I sort of came around to the idea. And ultimately, I think it ends up serving the subject really well, because Linda Kuhl did not finish her book. You know, she died tragically before she was able to assemble these parts into a coherent whole. And so now we see the scaffolding as well as the building that they're holding up.
Right.
I think it's really poignant and beautiful and dark and all of these things. And that ultimately, I came around to it. I came around to understanding that that's a really poignant decision on the filmmaker's part. And it's and it's the only way, really, to truthfully tell this story.
That's right. You know, Billy, in my, you know, mind's eye, has been screaming for decades, "Won't you please tell my story accurately? Somebody, however you can do it. Enough time has passed. My story needs to be told." And I think this is the closest that we've gotten to having Billy's story told in a way that is accessible, that is brutally honest, that is entertaining, but that is able to be grasped by people like us who know this music, but also people who want an insight, who don't know Billie Holiday. This is something that I would recommend that they get involved with. You were talking earlier, something that I wanted to address about the reporter and her relation to the landscape of this new world for her, of jazz musicians, of street characters, of people in the community who knew Billie from all walks of life. And I think for some protagonists, they're trying to go to a reporter with, "I'm going to tell you the illest detail that you aren't ready for, because I want to see if you can hang. Can you take it? Will you turn your nose up at me if I tell you my truth? If you don't, then you have passed, and I can trust you with more information." And I feel in subsequent interviews that we hear on this documentary with the likes of somebody like Count Basie, very skeptical at first, not very forthcoming, but eventually, you know, he lets his guard down, you know, maybe too much. There's an alleged relationship between the two of them that, you know, I can't really document, although it has been said. But even with someone like Joe Jones, you know, when Linda Kuhl actually listens to Joe's vitriol, he's able to get past a bit of that, you know, spirited discourse to some real basic truths about who he thought Billy was and what her opposition was as she matriculated in the scene. So I think Linda deserves props for sticking around and for hanging and not being scared off by folks who were really trying to test her to see if she was just some pesky reporter or if she really had the Billie Holiday love.
You know, when you say that, Greg, it reminds me of bandstand dynamics. It reminds me of, you know, rolling up to a jam session and, you know, the ultimate thing at a jam session is, can you hang?
Yeah.
Like, can you bring it? And if you can't bring it, can you endure the abuse?
That's right.
Around long enough until you can. You know what I mean? Like, that is some old-fashioned bandstand dynamics. You know, it's trial by fire. And you're right. Linda Kuhl deserves enormous credit as a journalist and just as a person for understanding that in some ways she has to just hang long enough to get to the good stuff. You know,
that's right.
You get the sense that she understands that there's a long game here. You know, I want to bring up the fact that her tapes include what I think is the only known interview with Jimmy Fletcher.
Wow.
Who was a real person. Right. So Jimmy Fletcher, the narcotics agent, there's a moment where she asks him to make this connection. Right. She says, you know, would she have been a target because, you know, that would have gotten you a lot of publicity for an agent? And he answers, well, not just for an agent, for the Bureau of Narcotics.
That's right.
So you get that acknowledgement, right, that like she was a target. She was a high profile target, you know, and we get that from the source. But you know, we do not hear about a love affair between Jimmy Fletcher and Billie Holiday.
That's right.
This is testimony, not fantasy.
Right.
And the thing that's crazy, right, is that as you listen to these interviews, you listen to, you know, the word of people like Joe Jones and Count Basie and Charles Mingus, why would you need to get fantastic about this life? You know,
yeah.
There is so much there. There's so much there. And it really does not need to be sensationalized. You know, a more masterful telling of this story in the fictive realm is possible. But, you know, at this point, the batting average on this thing, Greg, I don't know. You think people should just hang it up? Should we just retire the idea of making a fictional film about Billie Holiday? Or do you think that there may still be hope out there?
You know what? I think we got to hang it up. I think there have been so many misrepresentations. And when you think about it, you know, Billie is so sought after by anybody who has any inkling of what this music is about, especially in the jazz vocal tradition. And so many people are easily lured with Hollywood dollars away from making the type of biographical statement that I think it's just a lost cause at this point to really expect anyone with any high dollar promotion to make an accurate feature film about Miss Billie.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really want to believe. I want to be hopeful. So I don't want to close the door all the way. But man, there's not a lot of evidence to support the idea that someone can actually do right by this. On the other hand, the music is so alive. And I do think this documentary shed some new light on someone that continues to fascinate us. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Greg, maybe we should just do what we always do here and steer people back to the music, back to the source.
Absolutely.
You know, Billie Holiday will always, she'll always be Our Lady Day. She'll always be an enormous source of inspiration. With all of her life complications, with everything that that we know and all the things we don't know about her life. So I guess, you know, I don't know how else to end it, but to say, you know, put on some Billie Holiday. It's never a bad idea.
Right. Close your eyes. Listen actively. I have nothing else on. And just let that sound, that experience, that timbre, and that musical wisdom wash over you, and you will learn quickly what Billie Holiday was about, not only as a person, but as a channel through which the creative flowed generously. She's one of a kind, man, for that reason.
That is beautifully said, and I think we should end it there. Let me add merely that you can watch Billie, the documentary by James Erskine, on Amazon Prime. I believe you can also rent it on iTunes. We will have links to that movie on our show page. We will also link to The United States versus Billie Holiday on Hulu. If you decide to see this movie and you disagree vehemently with our opinion, let us know.
Right.
Give us a holler.
Right.
Are interested in a counter narrative here. And, you know, we'll also put some other resources at the Jazz United page. We will link to Farah Jasmine Griffin's book. We will link to an article or two that I've written about Billie, and maybe some other stuff. So please visit us at WBGO.org. Take a look at the Jazz United page. And hopefully we'll send you back to the music.
That's real. That's real. Folks, wherever you listen to us, make sure to tell your friends, subscribe to us. Like Nate was saying earlier, if you don't dig what we do, or if you dig what we do, either way, a 5-star rating is what we want. We want to rise in visibility to make sure that folks know there is a podcast discussion series about this wonderful, great music of ours. And hey, if you're able to, support WBGO. This podcast comes from WBGO, And we survive because of your kind contributions. You can go straight to wbgo.org/support. Tell them Nate and Greg sent you over there, and you can become a sustaining member for as little as $8 a month. Not a bad price to pay for premium content all year long, straight from the source, listener-supported WBGO.
Jazz United is a production of WBGO. Our producer is the great Sarah Kirsten. Our senior producer is Simon Rentner. Please, as Greg said, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme song is United by Newark's own Wayne Shorter, performed by Newark's own Woody Shaw. We'll see you next time.